Blog Talk Radio.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Hi everybody, I'm Kathy Brown of Capability Brand and Engage for Success. Before we get cracking on today's show, I should let you know that next week the radio show is hosted by Joe Dodds and will feature Louise Ufton from the BITC and Sam Veazey from M&S. And they're going to be talking about the BITC WorkWell model, which is aimed at raising awareness of the role in workplace wellness. But today, I'm delighted to welcome a long-term supporter of Engage for Success, Steve Jones of Skills for Business. Steve is currently the co-chair of the Engage for Success Guru Group, and his area of interest is motivation. Now, I'm particularly interested in this. I know it's something that I've struggled with at various points in my career, and that's both in the sense of my own motivation and how to motivate people that I work with or who work for me. And I'm sure it's an area of interest to a lot of people. So, Steve, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your interest in this topic, please?
Yeah, hi. Kathy, nice to speak to you this afternoon. My background was health and fitness management, so I was with Fitness First PLC when we just had a handful of clubs, and then we ended up being the largest independent health club chain in the world, all within a seven-year mm-hmm. period. So we experienced massive growth. We were dealing with a lot of young staff, bringing them into an environment which we thought was a playground, really, and then having to get them focused and on the work. And that meant looking quite closely at how they are motivated. I left Fitness First about 2001 and set up my own business, and really I started to look at performance in business, mm-hmm. and I came across a motivational talk called Motivational Mapping, which we'll probably touch on quite a bit this afternoon, helps managers understand what motivates people, and I've used it with a whole range of SMEs and corporates as well, and looking at teams mm-hmm. as well. And the areas I work in now really are leadership teams, looking at how you put a leadership team together, how they lead and manage their staff, and the mm-hmm. tools they might need to do that, really. So I hope that's given you a rough idea.
Yeah, definitely. So how does understanding how we and other people are motivated help us to work better?
Well, I think I said in the radio shows, highlight, it talks about people don't quit their jobs, they quit their bosses. It's quite interesting that we recruit staff and then we expect them to have leadership skills, be able to manage, sell, articulate messages. And really, we've only recruited technical skill, we haven't recruited these other skills, and they either get them by default or they don't get them. And your leadership is either successful or not because of it. So using mm-hmm. the sort of tools I run through my leadership program will help people understand, well, how do I understand the people I'm managing? So in the space of the four enablers, engaging leaders is about understanding your staff, and employee voice is about mm-hmm. full expression. So it kind of straddles those two as well.
I see. What's the general sort of research and theories behind motivation at work? I mean, what can you tell us about the bigger picture there, if you like?
Yeah, well, Motivational Maps is really, it was formulated by a guy called James Sale, and he was looking at how do you get staff motivated, and it comes from Edgar Schein's career anchors, comes from the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which most people know, and Enneagrams, which is a type of spiritual tool. So it's a combination of those, and it's a series of questions that challenges each there's nine key motivators, and they're all challenged against mm-hmm. each other, so you're forced to rank the important ones and the least important ones. And from that information, we can kind of determine why you come to work and why it's valuable, and what we need to look mm-hmm. for and how we need to manage you.
Yeah, and presumably people are motivated in different ways. So is it sort of connected to things like Myers-Briggs and personality types?
Yeah, it's not a personality profile, it's a motivational profile. So mm-hmm. I'll just make a distinction for you. So if you think about Bill Gates, he's in third world countries giving his money away right now. Has his personality changed? Mm-hmm. Probably not much. Has his motivation? Absolutely. So this is why people get out of bed and come into work. What are they looking for? What drives them? This is about their energy and what's going on with them personally around their energy. If you look at personality mm-hmm. profiles, they tend to be about their behaviours at work. I use both. I use disc profiling a lot with clients, but I use motivation even more because actually we need to understand what makes people tick, because if we can understand that, we can reward them accordingly. In a way they like to be rewarded.
Yeah. And can you give us some practical examples, Steve, from your experience across the years about how people use this type of thing and how it can affect and impact people for the better?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I was working with a top barrister. He contacted me because he had a fantastic skill set as a barrister. He was highly sought after, but he was actually fed up with the industry, didn't want to do it anymore, had come to the point where he wanted to escape it, really. I did a motivational map on him, and as a result of that motivational map, it was very clear that actually he didn't want to go back into that industry. If he'd taken his CV to a headhunter or a job centre, they would have put it straight back into the type of work he did. But what he ended up doing as a result of unearthing his motivations was actually he's now a landscape gardener, and he absolutely loves it. So it's about what ticks your boxes right now versus looking at your skill set. Okay, so it's what's driving you.
Does it often surprise people? I imagine that must have been quite a surprising result. So is that common, to be surprised when you start to dig into what motivates you?
Yeah, it is. Some people are more aware of themselves than others, but actually in his case, it wasn't a surprise, but he didn't know why he was feeling like he felt. And as soon as he saw his motivational map, it made it very clear to him, do you know why? I understand why I feel like I feel now, and I know what I need to do now. So it's helped him take the next step in his career for what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite powerful for people, because actually we do get pigeonholed around our skills, and sometimes actually, you know what, I'm brilliant at that, but you know what, I don't want to do it anymore. And then it's a case of working out, well, what do you want to do? Well, what drives and motivates you? And let's see if we can find something around there that would fit.
Yes, I do remember doing career anchors, probably about 10 years or so ago, and that the sort of self-awareness that was generated from just even doing that level of it was enough to actually change my career direction, certainly for a couple of years, because it made me think more. So I don't know whether that's, a common experience. I would imagine it probably is.
Well, it is, and we've mapped you as an individual, and we know that you've just gone self-employed recently. And looking at your motivations, that's a perfect solution for the types of motivations you have. There are some people that you just would suggest you never go for self-employed because you're not prepared to take the risks, and your motivations are telling you that quite clearly. And there's an example I have where I was contacted by a general manager of an architecture company who was being pressurized into buying the company off the owner. And he was having sleepless nights, wasn't comfortable with it, and when we looked at his profile, it was quite clear why. He didn't want his motivations didn't match the entrepreneurial requirement for managing a business. And as soon as he was aware of that, he was able to relax and go, you know what, that helps me make my decision. So there's loads of ways of using the tool, really.
As you just mentioned, Steve, we decided to use me as a guinea pig and have a look at my motivation through this tool, because we thought it might be useful to give people a really practical example of how we might use something like this. And I think it'd be interesting if you could give us the type of sort of overall view that you as a coach would see, having read my motivational map, but also I think if you were a manager, how would you be using it to motivate me better? So obviously there's things that I can learn from it, but then there's things that people can learn from it who have to deal with me as well. So I'm entirely open for you to say anything you like about my motivational report that you think will be good illustration for people.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things there. Firstly, it is brilliant if you take it to your manager and go, this is how to manage me. That really helps the manager. The manager sometimes is scratching their head trying to work out, how do I get the best out of that person? And having this at their disposal is brilliant, because it helps the individual get what they want and the manager get what they want. So that's the first thing. Secondly, I'd probably best to describe the motivations to you very quickly, first of all. There's 9 key ones. And then we'll talk about your report in a bit of detail, or not, depending on how far we get with this. So I'll start with the nine motivators. So basically, there's nine motivators. As I said, they fall into three key categories. There's three there's three relationship motivators, there's three achievement motivators, and there's three growth motivators. So let me just talk you through the relationship ones first. So the first type of motivator is defender. A defender wants security and predictability. So they're looking for the 9-to-5, dot the I's, cross the T's, don't really like me coming in because I represent change. They've already worked out their pensions. Then you have the friend. Now, the friend is looking for fulfilling relationships at work. They're looking for camaraderie, team, be amongst the team, be amongst people. The third type of motivating relationship is the star, and these people want recognition, respect, and social esteem. So they want to shine, they want recognition for the work they do. So they're the first three. The second ranking of three are achievement motivators. So you then have the director. The director is power, control, and influence. So these people want control. They want to grab responsibility. Great for succession because they'll grab responsibility. Danger is they may be a bit too autocratic in their style. Then you have the builder. The builder is all about material satisfaction, above average standard living. So these people want the trappings in life. So if you walked into, let's say, the banking world, it will be full of people with a builder profile. If you went to the stock exchange, exactly the same. Then you've got the expert. The expert wants knowledge, mastery, specialism. So they want to be seen as an expert, and they want to have learning opportunities in their role. So if I went into the education world, it'd be full of experts. If you went to an accountancy firm, the tax person would probably be an expert because they need to learn the stuff. Then you have the final three, which, funny enough, are all your top three. They're growth ones. And the creator is all about innovation, identification with the new. So they love challenges. They love problem solving. They like thinking outside the box. Then you have the spirit. The spirit wants freedom and autonomy. Leave me alone. Let me get on with it. That's what they're after. And then you have, of course, the searcher. It's the last of the three in the growth ones, which is all about making a difference, providing worthwhile things. So if you go into the nursing profession at the shop floor level, at the nurses will want to add value. The management team will want to make money. So you can see where the conflicts already occur. So
just
the nine
in general.
Yeah,
in general with those, Steve, I mean, they really, they're nice and simple, and I can recognise, you know, regardless of what they're called, when you talk about what they are, I can recognise things in there that I recognise in other people and that I recognise in myself. Do people's motivators change over time? Because I'm conscious when I look at it, and I know what my three main ones are from the map that we've done recently. Yeah. But I think if I looked at myself much earlier in my career, I suspect expert would certainly be in there. I went through a long phase of really wanting mastery and seeking understanding in a number of different areas. And so is that common, that people's motivators change over time?
Yeah, and we all evolved. If you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, as certain motivations get fed, new ones come into play. So when you're in your early days of employment, it would be good to have security. It would be good to have friends, and it'd be good to shine a little bit. So they're all the relationship ones, and then eventually over time they get taken over by achievement. So you move through the achievement, which is all about control, making money, being an expert. And then eventually you get to where you are now, which is it's a higher part of the triangle, if you like, where it's more about growth now. It's all about making a difference, doing worthwhile things, having the freedom to do it, and thinking outside the box. So you're right. There's kind of an evolution to these maps. And it doesn't mean to say you won't go back a step. If you lost all your money tomorrow, you go back a step, but you would move around it. So in terms of business, you can see what happens. Prior to the recession, you'd have a lot of businesses that are focused on making money, which is the builder, higher standard of living.
Yep.
Along comes the recession. That no longer is a motivator overnight. What the key motivator now is actually buttoning down the hatches, securing your long-term future. So Defender would be the main driver for that business through the recession. And it will determine, and they will be very cautious on what they did. So absolutely, you're right. They change depending on what's going on. And I'll give you one more example. You could have a teenager who's just got a job. He may be a spirit out partying every night, doing all the things he wants to do with his friend. And then along comes a female that he gets married to. He leaves home. Now all of a sudden it's not about a spirit. It's actually about do you know what, I need to make sure I can pay the bills, defender. So things can change in the blink of an eye, really, with this.
Yeah.
And it's being being aware of this when you're managing people, it's quite critical.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, Steve. Right, so what about me then?
Well, if you look at yourself, we know that your top three, your top one is a searcher. It's such a high score, and it's your name one. If whoever manages you, and I know you work for yourself now, so it's critical for you to get feedback that you're doing a good job. So this will be things for you like testimonials and conversations with people that actually are valuing what you're doing. So your clients valuing what you do. If you're not getting that, it's going to impact you in a negative way. Now, I know from your how you scored it that you actually are getting feedback. Interesting enough, your second motivator is creator. Creativity is the ability to innovate, think outside the box, do new and exciting things. And that's only, you scored that 5 out of 10. So there's some areas for improvement there to give you more, to challenge you to be more creative.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that's important. I know that it's important to you because your lowest motivator is defender. And when it's defender is low and creator's high, it means the need for challenge is even greater. So it means that you are a risk taker. And one of the things you may be cautious around is how much risk you'll take because you are, by default, a high risk taker. I don't know. I'm just saying this without getting any confirmation from you around it, but I'm guessing that you might need someone around you who just puts the handbrake on every now and again and says, do you know what, just be a bit cautious because actually you are quite a risk taker by nature.
Yeah, that is very interesting because that is entirely true. And anybody who's listening who knows me will know that. Finances particularly can be an area where I have good friends who I know will challenge me if I'm doing something particularly risky.
Yeah, and I think it's also, there's the element of searcher wanting to add value and maybe not charging for that value sometimes as well because search is so high. I'd rather help someone and worry about the money later. Well, actually, maybe I would be going to think about it differently, make sure you're adding value and but you're getting paid for the value you're adding. And that's going to help you as an entrepreneur. And the last thing for you, your third one of the top three is spirit. So you need the freedom and autonomy. So even when your friends are trying to tell you what to do, you won't take kindly to it because actually I can make my own decisions, like doing my own thing. Okay? So you won't want anybody telling you.
Yeah, that is also true.
So you can see if I was managing you, I'd have to make sure that we made sure that, you know, what you're doing was, you could see the value in what you're doing, that I was giving you challenging work all the time, it was really interesting, and I was giving you clear, concise instructions and just leaving you to get on with it. You'd be happy. And that's how someone would need to manage you, otherwise you'd be gone, basically.
Yeah.
Which is probably why you have gone. It's probably why you have gone and why you're doing what you're doing now.
Yes. I'm going to say, so this year I've made a big career change. After 20 years of corporate life, I've set up my own business. And clearly some of that was coming from those motivators changing over the years and putting me in a different place. Do people often have, can it be difficult to isolate one or two specific motivators? Do people have a very even spread, or is there always one or two that are really obviously driving their behaviours, their attitudes?
You get a mixture. Basically, they all rank against each other, and you do get some people who've got, I mean, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4 motivators above 20, which means to me that they're important to you. Some people can have almost a 5 or 6, 7 motivators above 20, and what happens there is they've got so many motivations at play that they can't focus. So one of the areas, one of their challenges is focusing, but they're quite balanced as a team member, where someone who's highly driven and the top three are so highly scored may be very focused, but actually not a team player necessarily. So when you get into this in more depth, you can kind of understand, well, who's going to be very focused, who needs support focusing in particular.
Yeah.
So it helps you.
Because I do remember again in my sort of younger years when I did that careers anchor one, what came out was sort of in a way far more balanced, I think, across these sort of general areas.
Yeah.
And they actually said, I think that I've got a career anchor of harmony almost. I forget what the terminology was from those. But it was because several things were so sort of imbalanced, but there was a combination of them rather than being an area that was really specific and noticeable.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to look at your Mac, because in yours, you're very, very highly driven right now. I'm just going to find yours very quickly, because I've got it here.
See, setting up your own business will do that to you.
And I know that I've got the balance of your relationship, achievement, and growth here. What it tells me is that your growth is 50%. So it's not balanced. You're not balanced. You're imbalanced, but for the right reasons right now, because it's all about the growth of yourself and your business. But achievement and relationship may suffer as a result of it. So what typically happens is you need to be aware of that. Okay. As you need to be, and then we have, if I was coaching you around this, we'd go, okay, well, it's you aware that actually it's not about relationship and achievement right now, it's about personal growth for you. So is the fact that it's 50% and the others are lower, much lower because of it, impacting you in any negative way? A little bit like we said, there's not a focus on making the money necessarily at the moment, but does there need to be? So we'll be having a conversation around that.
Indeed. This is really interesting to me, Steve, because one of the things that I write blog posts on at the moment is how I deal with my own engagement as a sole trader, which, in terms of the economy, is really just as important as people in big corporates and everything else. Small to medium-sized businesses and sole traders make up a huge proportion of our UK economy. And if we aren't perhaps in that self-aware way looking at what engages us, then we're not contributing as much as we could contribute. We're not getting as much out of going to work. Whether I'm one person, sitting having a cup of tea and doing a conference call in my pyjamas, or whether I'm 100,000 people in a large company.
It's
just as valid as engagement and motivation for either one, isn't it?
Yeah, you reminded me of a manager I had a business owner I was working with. His top salesperson was friend, but as for him as the business owner, friend was his lowest. And it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. I said, does that mean negative impact on you as a person? And what's the conflict between your top salesperson? He says, oh, my God. He says, when that salesperson rings me up, I hate it because he wants to talk about what's going on in his day and what's happening, and he wants to have a bit of a chit-chat, and I hate it. All I want to do is, has he got the results? He's flat out of freedom economy and making money. And I said, well, you better change the way you talk to him, then otherwise he's not going to be a top salesman anymore, is he? So you sometimes have to adjust your behaviour around your motivations to take into account other people's motivations. So looking at yours now, your cluster analysis, 50% about growth, 27% about relationship, and 23% about achievement. So what it tells me is it's all about personal growth and development for you right now. Secondly, the relationships you have. And thirdly, your achievement right now. So you just look at that and go, if it was totally balanced, it'd be 33, 33, 33.
Yep.
So is that, because growth's so high, is the relationship space and the achievement space being impacted any way negatively because of your focus, your motivational focus? And I'm guessing that's perfectly okay right now because you are actually growing your business. But you might think, is there any impact on the relationships I'm having with my clients or the achievement I'm trying to get to because I'm so focused on certain areas of growth?
Makes sense.
That's something for you to reflect on, not to discuss right now, but something for you to
reflect on. And this type of analysis would throw up questions, presumably, that's not relevant right now, but I'll let that percolate and come back to it and keep asking myself those questions, isn't it?
Yeah, well, what I do with this is I take it into the coaching space with someone. So, I teach managers how to do it as well. So if you've got an individual's motivational map and you know, because we know the motivational scores, and we know right now that creativity is not as high as it should be with you. So we'd explore what would make creativity greater, and then we'd actually go into a coaching space around how can we make sure that we set a goal for this.
Yeah.
What's the reality? And do the coaching methodologies around it to get you to where you need to be, so we win and the business wins.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, I mean, it's slightly similar to a question I asked you earlier, but when I asked about whether motivation changes sort of with the passage of time, but does it also change with age? I mean, we were obviously the example of the teenager and whatever else, but I find that quite interesting.
It does and it doesn't. Here's what happens sometimes. So, I mean, basically, sometimes you get people who are marking time to get out of a business. So towards the end of the career, they're not motivated because actually they just want to get retire, basically, and go off and do their own thing.
Yep.
So it doesn't always change. Typically, you evolve into a space where, yeah, where you are now, where actually it's time to go and do some stuff for myself and some growth. That doesn't always mm-hmm. happen. Some people who are, you know, I call, without being rude, employee mentality, would never take risks.
Mm-hmm.
They're never going to shift away from having a secure job, do a 9-to-5, dot the I's, cross the T's, and go home and do what they do. They're not going to change. If you're talking to career-minded people, it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in a slightly wider context, can sort of changes in society and society outlook affect how we're motivated as well? And the reason why I ask is because the searcher one, the one around seeking meaning and making a difference and providing worthwhile things, I think as a society as a whole, we're moving more towards that at the moment. And I think it's more on people's minds and they understand that actually working in that way and having meaning around work makes them happier and more content. And I'm not sure we'd have said that 20 years ago. So, you know, are we influenced as a whole by changes in society in this way?
I think
that's
so.
That's a
really big question,
I know.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say that. I've been looking at what's been, you know, I've been working with Hampshire Police, Serco and Capita, typically local authority-type mentality within the organisations. So very much defender profile, security and predictability.
Mm.
Take Hampshire Police as a prime example. I mapped all their teams, you know, child abuse through to CDR, everybody you can imagine, all their teams, and there was a common theme coming through that actually it wasn't because they'd never been asked to make money or be accountable around money, so builder was very low.
Yeah.
So it's very low around material satisfaction, above average standard living, and commerciality as a whole. Second lowest was star, so they'd never had to shout or shine or about what they do. Now, right now, the police, they have to be accountable commercially and they have to shout about what they do. The other thing that was coming through quite dominantly was the number one motivator through most of the teams was defender, because they were wanted a secure job and they wanted to defend the public. So they wanted to make everything secure and predictable. So, and of course, the trouble with a defender is they need lots of information around what's going on. And because they didn't have any information, they're feeling very insecure. Because there was lots of change and they don't like change, it really was damaging morale and motivation within the police force. You then take it to the next stage. What's the police force going to look like going forward, your point? Well, actually, it's going to be about adding value. It's going to be about being more entrepreneurial. It's going to be about more commercial in our outlook. So the type of people they're going to bring into the police force as a result of some of the stuff that we've been looking at, which they already knew anyway before we did this, was a different type of person, somebody who may have a five-year career with the police and do something else. So it's going to be a different type of environment going forwards. And, it's interesting conversation, this. You could almost run a separate workshop on it, couldn't you? Because where are we going next? It could be that employers don't employ people. They just put people together for projects. And when the projects are complete, they disband the team and then they save money. And I think that's somewhere where business is going in the future, especially with employment law being so difficult.
Oh, that's really interesting. Also sort of touches on a point around recruitment and if people are using motivation and that type of thing as recruitment elements. So I suppose that strays slightly more into the personality type piece, but...
Yeah, well, I've been using this with the South East Contact Centre Forum. So they look at contact centres, and contact centres typically have a high attrition rate of staff. But they've been looking at I've been looking with them at what type of staff, you know, are the ideal staff to go into to a call centre. Now, when you ring a call centre, you don't want to be passed on to somebody else. You want your question answered straight away by the person who takes the call. If you pass them on, people lose interest and disengage. So one of the key things that they're now recruiting is the expert profile, which is, you know, what someone who seeks knowledge and mastery of a subject.
Yeah.
So they're going to recruit people who have an aptitude to learn. The second thing, they need to make a difference. So they need to add value. So they need to be a searcher or friend, someone who could talk to someone and be really interested in them, and also someone who can add value. And the other one underpinning it is actually creativity, which is I'm going to think outside the box around what you've just told me. And I'm going to come back to you with a solution. So the type of people we're now recruiting into the contact centres is quite different. And it's also to do with the changing image of contact centres. Because typically they were just seen as transitional in employment, but now it's a career in its own right. So the type of people you're bringing in are now different.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. Well, thank you, Steve. We've reached the end, so that's as much as we can do for today. But hopefully people will have found that overview really, really interesting. As ever, we will be publishing a replay that will be available on Blog Talk Radio, on the Engage for Success website. People will find it through Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we'll put all of the details on there so that people get hold of them. But thank you very much, Steve. That's been great.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Kathy. It's been great talking to you.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.